We got a thumbs up. That means it's time to begin. And we'll begin, as usual, with a little recapping the trouble I've gotten you into.
Yeah.
So
you ever feel bad at a certain point?
No, I have no shame whatsoever. Naturally. Oh, no, I cry big, wet crocodile tears for you.
Okay.
I weep for you. Truly, I do. Mm-hmm. Very walrus and carpenter kind of crying for the oysters.
Okay, I don't get that
that's
reference.
Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, okay.
It's a good one. Sure. Read a book sometime. Okay.
That one's got pictures, so I know you read it.
Anyway, so we're going to stitch together a couple long-running threads here.
Okay.
Because you're in trouble mm-hmm. for the fraudulent nonprofits and daycares you set up in Minnesota as a proud Somali man. I got you in that trouble, and I'm very sorry. I was trying to get you out of it. I was trying to convince the Department of Justice that your daycares are real daycares.
Yeah.
So I was at the White House, and it just happened to be at the same time as I was explaining to Bondi that your daycares are real.
Blackout Bondi.
Blackout Bondi. That everybody's getting, the kids are getting very educated there. They're learning to read good, et cetera.
Roll good.
Trump was getting briefed by Tulsi Gabbard mm-hmm. on the intelligence about Iran's nuclear capabilities, where she said they're actually not pursuing a nuclear program anymore. Because mm-hmm. there's this discrepancy, right? Because we saw that in the hearing that she's saying, basically she said they're not pursuing, that their nukes got taken out, mm-hmm. their facilities. But Trump saw some intelligence or heard some intelligence and decided to do it anyway, but didn't come from her. Who'd it come from?
Hmm.
So Trump's leaving this meeting.
I don't know.
And he overhears me.
Robbie.
He overhears me saying to Bondi about your daycares. And I'm trying to say they're real. And like, I'm saying there's been, Christian Britschke told me there has been so much enrichment. The enrichment taking place. In those, but then he didn't hear the rest of it.
Yeah.
So I think that's why he thinks the nukes are being pursued.
That explains why they started off the war by bombing a school.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Yeah. Ooh, boy. That was just terrible.
It really
was.
Yeah.
We laugh, but it's bad.
Not so good.
No,
not so good.
It's not good. Well, and on you, really.
Yeah. Because that's really my fault.
What I said on your behalf.
Let me just.
You try to help out a friend.
Yeah. Well, okay. Intervening is not the solution here. I'll ask you to stop on my behalf and the behalf of innocents all over the world.
No good deed goes unpunished.
You're not
that's
doing
what I
good
find
deeds.
Out.
And I am being punished for them.
My intentions.
Yeah, that does matter a little. That does matter a little.
My intentions. Yeah. They're pure. So we're in this mess because of you.
Yeah.
And
he keeps saying because of me, but go on.
It will be not a forever war. J.D. Vance has been clear on that.
Well, eventually the heat death of the universe.
Right, no war can go on forever.
You know, John Goldberg has literally made that argument. He's it's not a forever war.
nothing's forever in a Dr. Manhattan kind of sense.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Eventually these
atoms will
giant
decay
floating balls of whatever, of nitrogen or whatever we're made of. Will go cold as the universe expands and all the stars die out. Yes.
And I imagine in such an environment, we will try to save the universe by once again bombing what is left of Iran.
Yeah, we will still have, we'll still be involved in our foreign entanglements in the Middle East when that happens.
Yes.
There'll be some comfort for the last man, for our descendants, for the computer consciousness. That's something we're going to talk about today. Robots.
Okay.
That's further further down the list.
But finish your thought here. We're in a bit of a mess.
I'm done.
Well, there has been in the administration some people have more things to say. Obviously, I don't know if you saw we had Joe Kent resign from the administration.
Yes.
Issued a rather peppery open resignation letter.
He said Israel did it.
Yeah, well, Trump has said that as well. So everyone, it is really remarkable how he just says the thing out loud that is always the conspiracy theory about why the war started. He's like, well, we went in for the oil, of course. Israel did it, and so we did it, right? And Marco Rubio said that, too.
I know, people got really mad at this guy who said, you know, very clearly that there was no intelligence that they were going to attack us or that they were a threat to us. The things that have been used to discredit him range from good try to bad. Mm-hmm. My most amusing one to me. So this is someone whose wife was killed in Joe Kent's wife was killed in combat in 2019.
Oh, okay.
And he also said that was Israel's doing. She was killed by ISIS.
Okay, so he is.
You're getting a little, you know. Yeah.
I know him as a perennial right wing candidate in Washington State, but
so his second wife, he's remarried or he's with another woman, is one of those lefty or like horseshoe gray zone people.
Okay, what's her name?
I don't know.
Okay,
but that's what I've been told.
Yeah.
So he hates America now because he's got a lefty girlfriend.
He's in love with a tanky. Yeah.
Perspective. Yeah, he did say. I mean, again, the we are doing this on behalf of Israel to some degree. Like that is an acknowledged goal
it's just
of the
like
war.
A statement is of our to strategic
degrade
position. Yeah.
Iran's ability to harm Israel and to fund terrorist groups that attacked Israel. Like that is. I'm not even saying that's an illegitimate goal.
It's just like a literal description of reality
of what we are doing.
Yeah.
Like obviously, giving $100 billion to Ukraine to have them fight Russia is done to benefit Ukraine.
Yeah.
But that's not a conspiracy theory. Right. The money is for, like, that's what the money's for.
Yeah, right.
In a Don Draper sense. He did say, Joe Kent, he started to get into a little bit of Charlie Kirk trutherism, too, in the interview.
Oh, really?
He was saying that he got blocked from, you know, asking questions about what really happened. That seemed like playing to the audience.
Yeah.
Because
gotta set up the next podcaster job.
Yeah. And he said the last thing Charlie Kirk ever said to him was, like, it's your job to stop us from going to war with Iran, which I don't believe.
No.
That would be like, and forgive me for if anyone watching has heard me say this joke on one of my other
media empires.
But that would be like if the last thing Charlie Kirk said to me was, Robbie, you really need to have another show. It would seem very self-serving, wouldn't it? Don't think so.
We're doing it for Charlie.
We're doing it for Charlie. It was his dying wish that we
it's
do
like
this.
If Charlie Kirk said to every Republican state legislature the last time he talked to them, name that highway after me.
bring back the word retarded. That's my dying wish. No, like, come on, guys. People are just, you know, it's what they want and it's not. But that's not to, now I'm sounding like I'm discrediting him too much. I don't know. And also, I don't think Iran had any capability to attack us, so.
Right, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's only a conspiracy theory to say Israel did it if you, like, disagree.
Right.
I think that's a bad thing. Then it's a conspiracy theory.
But this is a mess for the administration because, you know, so many high-profile right-wing commentator people are opposed to this. Yes, the base is still for it because they're for their support Trump. But, you know, you can't – if you destroy – if the price of oil skyrockets over the next couple of weeks and even that, if that only affects foreign investments in the U.S., it'll still hurt our economy.
The oil market is a global market.
There's
right?
a time
like, there's
limit
a
on this thing is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It can't be a forever war because Trump won't have the political capital. I mean, unless he's just – he doesn't care. Maybe he doesn't care about the future of the Republican Party. I'm not sure how invested Trump is actually in the post-Trump Republican Party. He doesn't care.
No.
Like the best thing for the Republican Party in 2020 was for him to go off into that, into the wild green yonder.
Right.
And he wasn't going to do that.
Yeah.
He said, no, I'm still the leader of the party.
Right.
Say I won.
Yeah.
Say it. Say I won. But it'll cost me my reelection if I say it. Say it.
Yeah,
and
right.
Everyone who said it is still standing and everyone who wouldn't say it is gone.
Yeah. He cost them a Senate majority
in
2020, which got us, you know, so much more inflation.
Didn't care.
He
doesn't care if J.D. Vance gets elected.
No. this is kind of a mystery that has been solved too many times, right? Is that Donald Trump cares about Donald Trump and Donald Trump alone, right?
I'm not criticizing that. That he has shown that unbelievable self-interest is a politically winning strategy. Like, don't hate the player for playing the game perfectly.
Yeah.
Within the rules.
Yeah.
For maximizing his odds of remaining the head of the party, the leader of the movement, the president.
Yeah.
Not the party.
Yeah.
Himself.
Yeah.
That's what the goal is.
Yeah.
From his perspective.
And he's been very successful at
and
that.
And he has ruthlessly done that.
And it's kind of your fault for not being able to stop it. Right. Not you individually, but...
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, clearly that's what people want, right? Like, we had a whole primary election where people, they could have voted for anybody they wanted. Nope.
I say that all the time to people. Like, you wanted this.
This is, yeah, you're getting
you
exactly
chose
what you
this.
Want. Yeah.
American people know what they want, deserve to get it good and hard.
And Chelsea Lincoln continues to be right.
It's true. You chose this.
Okay, so he is looking out for Donald Trump.
Yes.
He doesn't need to get reelected again. So he just wants to do what he wants to do.
Yeah.
Right? That's where we're at in this administration.
Yeah.
And that kind of speaks to everything he does. Like, oh, I like tariffs. Bam, press the tariff button. I never liked Iran. Press the bomb button. Right. But that doesn't mean he has any larger, huge strategic project in mind, even though obviously many people in his administration do vis-a-vis Iran. Right. Does he lose patience with this? And does he lose patience with this eventually? And then we wrap it up in some sort of face-saving way. And secondly, does it matter that all these right-wing people don't like the war? Right. Yeah.
That's the open question.
Yeah.
Does it matter that they don't like the war? It matters. It has to matter a little bit. It's how much does it matter?
Yeah.
It certainly doesn't help elect Republicans that so many conservative commentators from whom prospective voters get their news are very negative on the Trump project right now and are feuding with each other in an increasingly vain and desperate Real Housewives sort of way. Cannot be, like, they're not training their fire on Democrats.
I mean,
it's not a constant blitz of how bad and how loony Democrats are. That's what I'm used to seeing from your Megyn Kellys, your Tucker Carlsons, and so on. It's a united, and your Ben Shapiro's and Dave Rubin's, like, it's a united front about how loony and bad Democrats are. Now it's mostly a lot of fights about Catholicism versus Protestants. This cannot be helpful for electing Republicans. They just can't.
No.
It's
and,
not.
You know, okay, like, obviously Donald Trump is about Donald Trump, but, like, he does want a Republican Congress versus
Democratic to rubber stamp his agenda.
Yes, that's why we've been doing having all these redistricting fights and everything else, right? So, like, he does care about that. He does want to see
it helps
Republicans
him.
Elected. Yes, right, yeah, not out of anything else, but yeah, because it helps him. But does that get him to change the trajectory here? I mean, so far, I've been waiting for the Trump pivot, right? And you get sometimes his statements will give you an intimation that he's about to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll say something immediately after that makes you think this is going to last forever, right? The Trump pivot of like, oh, yeah, are we still talking about that? Yeah, no, we're wrapping up. We won. Yeah, great. Beautiful victory. Best victory ever, right? I'm waiting for him to say that. It doesn't matter if it's true or not, because he would never care if it's
true.
Well,
he doesn't like to say things are... He doesn't like to be put in the position of ruling things out.
Yeah.
That's what's fun. Like, reporters will ask him questions like, would you ever
send
in ground troops? And he's like, well, I could.
Or he always says maybe.
I might.
Yeah.
Would you, arm Sasquatches and send them to the moon? I could do it. I might do it. We're looking into it,
They're pretty big guys.
Like, he's just not going to... Oh, my God. He had an all-time... banger of a quote yesterday.
Oh, when he was talking to the Japanese prime minister?
He's just the funniest.
He literally
he's the funniest man. He's the greatest content creator in the history of time.
Yeah.
Telling the Japanese that they know a thing or two about surprises.
Pearl Harbor.
It's just great.
Oh, and that poor woman, the poor Japanese prime minister.
Right. And she's like, in that Asian mode of just has to smile and nod about everything because she feels constantly under surveillance. And
and yeah, it's just her smile gets more pain and awkward the entire time.
It's great.
Oh, so good.
It's really great.
Yeah. Oh, man. How funny. People were trying to like fact check him, being like, the prime minister was born after Pearl Harbor.
Like, shut up.
Who gives a shit?
Go away.
Laugh
Stop.
At the joke. Yeah.
Stop. Stop this, you humorless scolds.
Do you remember when he was, some reporter asked him a question in a press conference he had with Erdogan, I believe, and he's like, maybe I should make you disappear. He knows a thing or two about that.
I know, it's great. Just, he will say things you are not supposed to say, and that, that's something people have always admired about him.
It I enjoy him tweaking the authoritarian foibles of foreign countries.
It makes him an all-time great content creator.
Yeah. Not necessarily a great president, but
not so great necessarily. We'll see. Yeah. Jury's still out, but
okay. So
moving on.
Yeah. Well, I guess question. So this guy Joe Kent resigned from. Mm-hmm. He was a
counterterrorism.
Yeah, we have another alleged Iran war critic in the administration. Not going anywhere.
Tulsi.
What do you think is going on there? Has anyone?
Well, she obviously opposes the war.
Yeah.
J.D. Vance probably does, too, for that matter.
Right.
So what are they supposed to do? Resign? They're just keeping their heads down. And, I mean, you know, J.D. Vance is a dutiful cheerleader for the administration. Tulsi basically, she didn't say anything that was untrue in the hearing when she was asked about this. She said pretty flatly that the intelligence that I shared did not suggest this. And they're like, okay, but Trump decided to do it. And she was like, well, I don't make the decision to do it. He makes the decision based on all the intelligence. And they're like, but you gave him all the intelligence. Like, well, I gave him intelligence that said this. I mean, they just went in this utter circuitous little, where she basically left it open, I guess, that Trump saw some other intelligence, like me saying that you had said the thing about enrichment.
Right. That's really what was it.
So that's really
what
explains.
She wasn't privy to that. Well, okay, no. So J.D. Vance, I understand why. I mean, what's he get? He's the vice president. He's a constitutionally elected officer. He can't go anywhere. He can't be fired.
Right.
It would be insane for him to resign as like a political
move.
It would be kind of interesting.
They used to do that in the 19th century, but it's been a long
time. Presidents would resign a lot. Yeah, I mean, this was back when the president was less of a big deal, and vice presidents were like bottom of the barrel.
Yeah,
right? We would go
nothing.
Months without a vice president.
Yes.
Right.
Jefferson Davis wasn't he vice president? Not Jefferson Davis. Calhoun was vice president.
Yeah,
and resigned from Jackson.
Over the tariffs. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Jackson also threatened to invade South Carolina and hang him, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What a guy.
I mean, it would be interesting if he fulfilled what could, you know, was kind of always intended as the vice presidential role, or at least as an easy one that it could have become, of like the shadow president, like you're the opposition in residence. If he came out against the war, but he can't be fired. I guess he could be impeached, but they probably don't have the votes for that, right? And he's the president of the Senate, so he would vote against his own impeachment.
Yeah.
If he came out but I mean, that would be a political disaster for him.
Right.
But it would be fun.
It would be fun.
But no, so I don't expect him to resign, even though he probably doesn't like this course of action.
It'd be something to happen on 24.
Yeah, right.
There's a lot of seasons of that, those kinds of things where the vice president is acting against the president. There's the second season of 24, I think. The vice president and the cabinet try to do the, what is this, 26th Amendment?
25th
Amendment, because the president doesn't want to immediately go to war with them because there's a terrorist attack. And then he thinks it's a false flag, though. It's some oil interest group have faked it to make it look like it was the Middle Eastern country.
Yeah.
And the president's skeptical of it. And they're, you know, this all takes place over the course of a single day, because that's the conceit of 24.
Yeah.
So they're trying to remove 25th Amendment him so they can bomb this country. And Jack Bauer is racing to expose that the data was faked by this other concerned parties. It's great.
Wow.
It's great stuff.
Yeah. We don't get that in politics.
I love 24, but that's a subject for another day.
All right. Well, yeah, we can maybe get around to that.
24.
Yeah, people obviously want our politics to work like that.
Yes.
The periodic, like, are they going to invoke the 25th Amendment?
Ooh.
All the, like, Robert Mueller fandom from back in the day.
Oh, Mueller, she wrote.
Russiagate, Hunter Biden, like, the scandal that's going to bring down the... No. There's no scandal is ever going to bring down any president ever again.
They didn't 25th Joe Biden when he was literally basically deceased in office.
Right.
So
yeah,
I don't want to hear it on anything. I love
it's
when they start, man, Trump sounds just really unhinged. He's gonna get like, Joe Biden was not, he was not conscious for the presidency.
Yeah, right.
And you all covered that up. Okay. Anyway.
J.D. Vance isn't going anywhere. It'd be ridiculous to expect him to do anything other than what he's done already, which is like leak, like, oh, this wasn't my idea.
Mm-hmm.
But Tulsi Gabbard has a fake job, right? And her whole shtick was kind of heterodox anti-war person,
right?
So I don't really understand, unless her role is more prominent than it appears from the outside, I don't really understand what she gets by just staying in the administration and keeping her head down. I mean, because your life after this is...
I'm not sure what she gets by resigning either.
Back to the podcasting studio, you know?
Well, a lot of them would rather podcast. Dan Bongino would rather podcast.
Clearly,
but
this Joe Kent guy wants to go be, you know, Patreon, you know, I was in the administration guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, I mean, I guess, yeah, it's better to be director of national intelligence than do that. But
I mean, I'm of the thinking that all things being, I'd rather have someone in the administration who shares my foreign policy skepticism, non-interventionism, even if they're not being effective, I guess,
yeah.
rather than they're certainly not effective from the outside. I don't know. I don't think it's the duty of everyone to resign if they don't agree with the policy necessarily. That will just make the policy more, you know, one directional.
Yeah.
I don't know. I could be persuaded I'm wrong about that.
No, I mean, I think there's a,
you know,
it's, some judgment is required here. It's just, it's a question of like, you join an administration to work, to do something, right? And then, but if you feel yourself participating in something that is quite the opposite of what mm-hmm. you joined to do, at some point you do have to leave, right? But I also understand, like, you work in an administration, you're not the president, you don't get to make every call, and you're going to disagree with a lot of calls that come down.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. So this seems like, just given what she went into the administration for, presumably, this seems kind of...
Maybe it's a team of rivals kind of situation, you know, the room of people who think differently, they discuss, they debate, and then Trump makes a call, and sometimes it goes one person's way, and sometimes, yeah. I mean, Susie Wiles made it sound like they really tried to talk him out of the tariffs right away.
Yeah.
And they lost that argument, and
like, okay, that's just how it goes. The president gets the same. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it's not wrong.
Fair enough. I mean, I prefer that to people constantly trying to, like, literally undermine the president. Remember this from the first Trump administration? The, like, anonymous New York Times op-ed.
Don't worry, we're really running things.
That's
this
not
the
comforting
under,
at all.
Under yeah. secretary of nothing.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
Dude.
Right, yeah, we're stealing papers from his desk because we think he'll make the wrong decision.
Yeah, well, that's not democracy.
No, not at all, not at all.
We chose this.
Yeah, we deserve we deserve everything.
We
that's happened.
Deserve what we get.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to move on.
Okay, yeah.
To a couple other news topics before we do some fun.
Okay.
James.
Gotta eat the vegetables.
James Tallarico. Well, this will be fun to make fun of him.
Okay.
He's such a pathetic loser. This is the Dem Senate candidate who was the more electable one. I was totally wrong about that. Jasmine Crockett, absolutely more electable than this
guy. Absolutely, 100%.
Because she's funny and interesting. She's very pretty.
Provocative.
She's a fun person to listen to, and I miss her. This guy is like just white bread, like soggy white bread.
With sprinkles on it.
Oh,
hey, okay, wait, can I do my James Tallarico impression?
Yes, yes.
Okay, one sec.
Yeah.
Just gotta get my hair, you know, gotta get the Boy Scout
yeah.
hair real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you ready for it?
Yeah.
Jesus, what's good?
Oh, I know, it's so lame. Right, because he's in this video from 2022 saying, this is why our campaign is going vegan. It's in Texas.
Yeah.
And he's wearing a COVID mask. It's 2022.
Talking into a microphone to what appears to be an empty room, wearing a mask.
In 2022, that was a year after we'd had vaccines and the relaxation of all guidance in red states and even most of the guidance everywhere else, unless you're in like a university campus where they were going to make you get, you know, your fifth booster and put you in a dorm room by yourself and trap you in there until you suffocated or went mad. Everywhere else, we had gone back to normal.
Yeah.
And he's masking up.
Yeah. This
is a campaign for people with long COVID.
Truly, truly. Yeah. Although they're not going to be able to get to the polls, you know?
No. Yeah. You want them to participate in a mass disabling event?
Yeah, right. Social murder? No, thank you.
Make them do the emotional and physical labor of going to the polls, you monster.
When you couldn't even
right.
lock yourself away for the rest of your life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, real Rapunzel politics.
So he sucks and is woke. And
I'm surprised that even someone, I mean, he represents like suburban Austin. Is mm-hmm. that right? I'm surprised there's even
in Austin.
Okay. Or yeah. It's,
oh, no. I agree with you.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I'm surprised even in Austin they would elect him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, obviously like people, you know, Texas conservative leaning, Republican leaning state, although less and less,
right.
you know, but in every conservative state, the cities are going to be more liberal. Right. But you still expect the cities to have some self-respect. You know, like, it's shocking to me that this kind of guy would succeed where other more human and human reasonable. Seeming. Yeah.
He seems like he's wearing a human disguise.
He does. He does.
Liberal human disguise.
Yes. Yeah, he seems like he's like the woke version of They Live, you know, the lizard people wearing the masks or Invasion of the Body Snatchers or something like that, right? Have you ever seen that movie? That was one of Murray Rothbard's favorite movies.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with it.
He hated 2001 Space Odyssey, but he loved Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, there seems something off about him. Yeah. Or like the astronaut's wife or, any of these sci-fi possession, alien possession type movies. Yes. That is the vibe that you get from him.
The Stepford Candidates.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, he should be running in Connecticut, for God's sakes. So, I mean, he's going to get crushed. Like, there's just more and more. I'm surprised. I don't know. It really speaks to the uselessness of primaries at a certain point, I guess, right? It's like, where were all these videos? Like,
they waited till the day he won the primary. And then maybe Republicans were deliberately holding back.
Well, of course. Like, of course.
Now he's won. Release the clips from 2020. Release the summer of discontent videos.
I guess this wouldn't move Democratic primary voters at all. But you'd wonder, like, why isn't the Crockett campaign being like, okay, like, she's kind of crazy, but he's unhuman.
She was too busy being crazy. She was like feuding with reporters and she's kind of a drama queen. I love her.
No, don't tell me she's self-obsessed.
Oh, I love her so much.
I guess this is a common mistake in politics, right?
She's also, can I say, she's a very attractive.
Yeah, you said that. And I agree.
Very bland looking,
boyish. But not in the good way in which people say that.
Right.
Childish.
Right.
Juvenile.
Right.
Yeah. Sexless. Yes. Not to sound, you know, it's not gay to call someone sexless, right? They're just something.
You're going to have to spend some time in the Strait of Hormuz after this. Trying to make a joke about that, but
did you see that there was a good tweet where it was like, it was just called the Strait of Moose before your mom showed up. I feel like there's this mistake people make, right, where it's like, instead of just going with what you really want and having someone sincere that represents your desire sincerely, which, you know, as a down and out Texas Democrat, that's Jasmine Crockett for you, right? You go with who you think the other side is going to find more palatable, even though you don't understand them and what they want, right? Mm-hmm. And it's always going to be some cheap imitation of something else that they already have.
Yes.
And so that's what they've done here by going with James Tallarico.
Yep.
The man has, what is going to be the vote count here? I mean, provided they don't nominate Ken Paxton, but,
Republicans could screw this up because they might nominate just a loathsome individual, just an utterly repellent. And you can see them collectively, the Republican primary voters in Texas, wanting so bad to pick this loathsome, monstrous human being who is just a vile person in how he treats others, in his corruption, his, like, naked corruption. But they...
Like, is that a reference to his affairs, his naked corruption?
But the libs and the mainstream media keep pointing out that this guy is, you know, pretty awful. And that makes them want it so much more.
I'll do it.
They're just like, they're a little kid who's been told, look, you can have, you know, this cookie. You just have to wait 5 more seconds. And you can see them going, I want it now. How dare you, Mom, tell me I have to wait 5 seconds? They're children. They're psychotic children, and the joy they will feel to get this guy and then have him lose narrowly to James Tallarico. They'll do it. They could do it.
Yeah, I mean, we've
they probably will.
We've seen this story play out.
It's the Carrie Lake effect.
Yes, Arizona. Arizona should not have 2 Democratic senators, right?
No.
It's madness that that's the case. Yes. But... the Republicans in Arizona are just like, we have to lose the Senate race. There's nothing more I want than to lose the Senate race, right? Yep. And here we are.
The previous governor, who's a Republican governor, normal, moderate business Republican.
Doug Ducey.
Right. Yeah. Formerly CEO of Cold Stone Ice Cream. It's great ice cream shop. Great guy. Big fan of school choice and a lot of libertarian compatible economic ideas. I met him. I spoke at Arizona State University once, or on behalf of Goldwater Institute.
Yeah. He recorded a podcast in this very room.
He's great. He introduced me. He was so nice. You know, when he had run for reelection, massive victory. Mm-hmm. And then 4 years later, Republican goes down to defeat because it's Carrie Lake.
Yep.
And
she's an insane person.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, again, they got what they wanted.
They got what they wanted.
Hope you enjoyed that.
Yeah, this is why I'm always skeptical of, you know, sometimes people in our circles will get really a libertarian adjacent cause, not like an ideological libertarian cause, but things like ranked choice voting, sure, or open primaries.
I have a very close friend of mine is obsessed with ranked choice voting. He works on ranked choice voting campaigns. It's like his crusade.
Okay, yeah.
I support it. I can't get out of bed for it.
No, I would not.
Tweaks to the system aren't sexy enough to me as a thinker.
No, and
I can't care enough, but right. I would support it if it was.
I think there's all these different types of electoral reforms that you could imagine. As libertarians, like I don't feel like we should be wedded to any particular democratic political arrangement.
I mean,
right?
It would be nice though if we got as a party or a movement that gets between 1 to 5% of the vote, if that then afforded us 1 to 5% of the representation in the government.
So that'd be
would
like
be
proportional
nice.
Representation.
That
yeah.
would be good for us.
So there's all these ideas, right? And I can't, a lot of them are fine. Like ranked choice voting seems like that would maybe be a more efficient aggregation of preferences.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter at the end of the day because the people want bad things. And it's a popular system. And so they're going to vote for bad things and the bad things are going to win.
Right.
Right. They want, why are we debating between like a woke, you know, hollow man and an absolute slug?
Right.
Right. Like, why is that the likely Senate campaign in Texas, you know, where a giant state with endless amounts of smart, talented people who I'm sure have ideas about government and how the state should be run? Why are these our options? Because people want bad things, and the system produces bad things.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. Another way is that politics attracts bad people.
Yeah.
And so that's who's drawn, you know, somebody who wants to run for office in order to curb the power of the government, not exercise power given to them, place limits on things, not spend money, you know, that person doesn't run for office. That person is managing a successful company or something.
Yeah,
that person is attracted to, you know, people of our ideological bent are often, I think, not attracted to being in government because it's so, the way it works is just so different from the private sector, so estranged from our ideas. That's one idea. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, but. I mean, I think there's probably something to that. Max Weber, the German sociologist, he had this idea where basically like politics is set up to be anti-business because for businessmen to leave their enterprises and go into politics, they have to sacrifice some control over their former job. Whereas like lawyers exist to just write laws, right? So like you're not losing anything by being a, you know, a non-proprietary professional in politics, right? But the capital class is.
This goes into the other political topic I definitely wanted to hit today, this showdown between Rand Paul and Marquaine Mullen.
Right. Yeah, gloves were really coming off.
They were. And I, you know, I saw a split in the social media reaction.
Talk about a man who ran because this is Mark Wallen is maybe the exception that proves the rule. He ran a successful business, you know?
That's true.
And then decided he wanted to get in politics because he's an absolute clown and a human being.
Because he likes the idea of violence.
Yeah,
and Rand Paul has a principled desire to limit the government's use of violence. And so you saw that ideological clash play out between them where Rand Paul immediately and rightfully, in my view, called out Marquaine Mullen for previously making light of a vicious and brutal physical attack on Rand Paul by his neighbor. People don't understand how bad it was. He was struck from behind by this man, viciously beaten, hospitalized. He was in bad shape. He had several ribs broken. He had part of his lung removed. It was an awful thing to happen to him. And Marquaine Mullen said, you know, Rand's such an asshole.
Yeah.
I can understand why he did it. And, you know, I thought we're supposed to have a pretty zero tolerance attitude for political violence. Like, if you said that about anyone else, now I'm not going to clutch my pearls. And I think Rand wouldn't have either if he had just fucking apologized.
I should have said that. That was wrong. Senator, I'm very sorry for making light of this horrible assault.
And then if Rand had still harped on it,
then he would have,
I would have gotten it. But I'm sorry, man. You're not entitled to this position, and you have to persuade the chairman of the relevant committee, and you said a shitty thing about the chairman of the relevant committee, so it's time to apologize. Like, that's just the normal human being thing to do. And he couldn't back down.
Yeah.
And that worries me, and clearly worried Rand, who's like, we're trying to approve you for the position to oversee people whose use of force is under scrutiny, and you can't even apologize. And then he said something about how, like, we should still settle things with, you know, duels. And Rand again had to point out that, like, even in the era where people did that,
it was
illegal and not popular.
Right.
You had to frequently go, people don't know this, that you had to frequently go into parts of the country that were not settled yet, that were not made into state, that were territories still, where there weren't laws, or into Canada or something.
Right.
So you'd not be subject to the authority. Like, this was not sanctioned. This was not actually.
It was scandalous when it did happen. Right.
Because it's a very bad thing.
Yeah.
And so that was deeply concerning. So I saw on social media, you know, some people saying, Rand's got to get over this. He made it all about himself. And then other people saying, no, he beclowned himself, Mark Wayne Mullen.
So. Absolutely. The man is a clown, or at least he's playing a clown. You know, I have some respect for him as like a successful business owner who can bench 330 pounds.
Yeah, but, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. I can't do that. But other than that, yeah, sure. A, just if you're smart, you apologize, even if you don't feel it in your heart. Although it would be good if you did.
Right.
And then secondly, like, this is actually, as Rand said, this is actually is a very relevant, like, line of questioning, because, you know, I wonder, will the DHS secretary ever be in a position where they have to talk about some use of force and say whether we got things right or wrong or what happened, you know? Of course. And so if this is going to be his attitude the next time one of these ICE goons shoots somebody, and he's just like, you know, that's how we settle things in this country. Oh, good. Cool.
I don't want I'm so sick of these pretend tough guy type personalities. Because also he's giving the impression that he's like a military type guy. He hasn't served in the military.
Yeah.
He's a small business owner, which I don't stigmatize at all. I think that's wonderful. And he was an MMA fighter briefly, which is cool. But
I didn't realize that. That makes sense though.
It's great. Cool. But he's not going to have relevant military or law enforcement experience. Christy Noem was the governor of a state.
Yeah.
He went from that to House to Senate.
Right.
So I'm just, you know, I don't mean to sound lame here, but we have too many performance artists and tough guy. Like, it's not reality television.
Yeah.
Real life.
It's time to stop the clown car.
It's time to let some professionals into the administration.
I have a certain almost nihilistic attitude about like government competence at times, where it's like if it's a function I don't want the government to be exercising, maybe it's better that it's run by idiots so that they're able to do less. But Christy Noem was the exact example of why that's a bad attitude oftentimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like for something where it's like the men with the guns, like the professional who, you know, like the Tom Homan types who have a clear idea of the bad thing they want to do, but we'll keep it within the bounds of the law for the most part. Like, that's kind of who you want, because fewer people are going to get killed.
Right. Like, let's compare it to the private sector. Let's say you have a business that is going through some kind of public controversy. They screwed up something and they fired the CEO and they're hiring a new CEO. And the CEO is meeting with the board and they're interviewing this guy, Mark Wayne Mullen.
Yeah.
And they say, you know, you got recommended to us. We'd like to hire you, but, you know, we're looking over some of your statements and, you know, this is a sensitive PR position and we got to really establish faith again with our customers. You know, you said X, Y, Z. And what if he just said, well, I'll never apologize for that. You know, we need men again to run things. I'm not going to apologize. Come on, man. We wouldn't accept this in the private sector.
Yeah. Actually, you know, to draw a parallel, do you remember, this is a few weeks ago, so obviously no one remembers anything, but there was the McDonald's CEO was getting made fun of online for like taking a very tepid bite of their new burger. And not appearing to enjoy it so much. I think it was a fine video, mm-hmm. but whatever. Do you remember this? No. Did you see this? Okay. No. So then, like, the Burger King CEO goes out there and is like, oh, you know, that's a terrible burger
love
apart.
That.
Yeah. So all the other CEOs are making fun of him. But the McDonald's CEO was, like, a very, like, thin, trim guy. He seemed like a nice, put-together man. Not
a twink.
Okay, not everything has to be gay.
Okay.
He's
tell that to the Ayatollah.
Yeah, right. Well, when he wakes up, maybe. sorry. We can make fun of
yeah,
him.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
The Ayatollah.
It's not like the yeah. school. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. But no, I was looking up, so like, who is this like stick of a man who became the CEO of McDonald's? And he was brought in because the last CEO had some sexual scandal, was having sex with an underling, right? And they brought him in.
Underage?
No. Nothing illegal, oh, okay. but mm-hmm. improper, right? Mm-hmm. And so they bring in this guy who, like, got a Harvard degree in brand management and, like, runs marathons and is just, like, the most, like, you know, cut or, you know, what do you call mm-hmm. that? Clean cut yeah. guy. You
You're really
imagine.
Into this guy.
It was interesting reading about him because it's a career trajectory you don't really think about. It's like, how do you become one of the, like, the richest paid or most paid people in the country is, like, just work your way up the corporate ladder. Normally you assume you have to become famous or own something,
sure.
found something, right? But so that was interesting in that sense. It kind of stuck in my mind. But it's like, this is who you bring in, to your point, to clean up,
fix
clean house,
PR.
Yeah, to close down the playground at HQ in the McDonald's situation. But
they're closing down too many playgrounds at McDonald's. Actually, we talked about that previously. Like, there's no ball pit now. There's just they're supposed to stare at screens.
That's terrible.
It's terrible.
It's terrible.
Playing in the ball pit was really fun as a kid.
I broke my. Did I tell you this? I broke my foot in a ball pit.
Good.
And I was better off for it.
I'm glad. Mm-hmm. I'm glad. Yeah. Those. You know, scrape the, maybe not break
formative
the foot,
experiences.
But scrape the knees, you know, get a little bloodied, get a little, you know, truly learning how to physically interact with other people is something kids need to learn.
Mm-hmm. Look, at some point you're going to leave school. You're going to leave the helicopter parents. You're going to be in a corporate environment where you're throwing plastic balls at people and you're going to want to know how to do it.
Exactly. When you're crawling through little tubes and going down slides. Wouldn't that be fun if that's how we just got around?
Absolutely.
And then you encountered somebody else in the tube and you got to kind of squeeze past them.
Instead of right in that tomb of an elevator up and down every day.
I know. I wish we could take a little slide down
I would
at
love
the end
that.
Of the day. Wouldn't that be great?
Mm-hmm.
Into a ball pit.
Yeah. How would we get back up, do you think?
Well, you got to... Oh, a rope ladder.
Yeah, there'd be a climbing gym. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, we solved that.
Okay. You know, speaking of inappropriate relationships, did you... surely, this is an OG one. Or not an OG, but this surely gave you flashbacks. This House candidate in
I always
Illinois.
Check their IDs, by the way, but continue.
Oh, okay, yeah. makes the blackmail operation easier, I guess.
Yeah.
This House candidate in Illinois was hit with this horrible accusations that he slept with a student when he was 26
she
was
20.
Right, they made out
my God.
A few times.
My God, this was such a great one. This is the gentlest Me Too story ever. And it didn't work. He won.
It fizzled, yeah.
But
well, do you want to add more of the details? Or
yes, it's that he was accused. He was a professor, and he was like 26, and she was 20. And after the class was over, she's no longer a student. He asked her out, and they went on a few dates, and that was it.
And then he broke it off because he still felt
then
maybe
he broke
this was,
it off.
Yeah.
And then years later, she said how that negatively affected her and she didn't even want to be a math expert anymore. It was a math class. So she tried to Me Too him over that during the closing days of this campaign. I guess he was a more moderate. I mean, he's not that moderate at all, but he's not a leftist.
Yeah.
And so the real left, I think the left was taking this up because they were trying to boost the more pro-Palestinians, AIPAC, it's all about Israel always.
Sure.
I don't know why in Illinois. But anyway, this didn't matter at all, and he won, which feels good because this was so stupid.
Yeah. I almost feel embarrassed for the woman making the accusation.
Right.
It's like you thought this was going to be a big thing.
Right.
But, okay, I guess to her defense, I don't know, 6 years ago? This would have been a big thing.
It would have in 2018.
Yeah. And if this was 2018, 2020.
Jezebel, The Cut, The Daily Beast.
There would have been Huffington Post. There would have been a round of secondary stories of women who had been in his class remembering some joke he told.
Oh yes.
Maybe he didn't text someone back when he should have. Yes. And it the accusations would flood in.
Yep.
And he'd be toast.
Yep.
I find this went nowhere, had real no impact in the world. And
we
so,
live in a saner time in that.
But that's why I appreciate episodes like this. It's a reminder of who used to be running the store.
Yeah. If you had something like that happen to you, God forbid you were someone who like went on dates with women and someone noticed that in 2018,
yeah.
You would be screwed.
Done.
You were so screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we had an actual...
Heterosexuals were being hunted in the streets.
So I just decided to get out of the whole, out of the whole game. It's just not worth it. It's too dangerous.
A bit too messy.
Huh? Speaking of a more serious Me Tooing, okay. Cesar Chavez.
Oh, not so good.
Brutal story. And again, you know, I always like to be a little careful because, you know, the Times is saying we verified this and verified this and verified this. We're still talking about events that took place 40 and 50 years ago.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, their verification is that this, the victim said, told it to someone who remembers hearing it at the time. So it seems pretty competently researched, and they certainly took their time with it. And so I'm not really casting aspersions on it, but I do always say, like, I don't know how much more. How can I adjudicate things that happened 50 years ago that I have no firsthand knowledge of, for which there is no. But, they, you know, they have some journal entries and things that, of the people who experienced this talking about it. Real young girls.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everything. Also, like, a forced rape of a 36-year-old aide of his, but then also sexual conduct, misconduct with 12 and 13-year-olds, which is real young. Which, in fact, are you ready for the controversial statement?
Uh-huh.
You ready for the get us canceled statement?
Okay.
This is worse than anything Jeffrey Epstein is accused of.
Wow. Yeah.
So I certainly hope, by the new standards of the crusade we're on, that we will be releasing all the files the FBI has on him. Mm-hmm. We will be reading all, he probably didn't send any emails, any letters he sent, anyone who corresponded or traveled with him. I hope they're losing all their prestigious fellowships.
Mm-hmm.
I hope we're presuming that anyone who had contact with him during that period was complicit in any of his sexual crimes and was probably raping underage girls too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just... These are the rules, I'm told. So I'm sure we're going to get right on that, given his extensive ties to labor and the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
I'm sure the Chavez class will be exposed right away.
You know what I'll
settle? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I'll settle for?
Hmm.
Just the complete abolition of labor unions.
Sold. Fine.
You got it, yeah.
Okay.
Well, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
I guess it does. It's always silly. People of all political persuasions and in all different types of institutions have committed horrible sex crimes.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't maybe draw a connection between someone's politics and the things that, you know, the horrible things that they've done. But that being said, you know, labor unions are just mobs.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
The idea that a labor leader, you know, Reason has had many stories about Cesar Chavez's thuggish tactics. Over
oh, yeah,
years
going
and,
back. Yeah, we had some great reporting
80s,
on that.
I mean, as is the case with a lot of activist types, they're very controversial in their day and often deservedly so.
Right.
Particularly,
they had all the other labor leaders who crossed them murdered.
Yeah. I mean, unions have lots of blood on their hands.
Yeah.
Unions are not good.
Yeah.
Unions are not good. And that was even like when they were like trying to like, you know, get a little bit of dust out of the coal mines.
Yeah.
Now it's like, come on. They're
yeah.
You know, trying to get to,
next, they'll be taking the kids out of the coal mines.
Yeah,
who's gonna work?
Yeah,
well, you
understand. Yeah, you understand why Cesar Chavez maybe wanted that.
Oh,
but sorry,
yeah.
That's terrible.
Maybe better off in those
but
coal mines.
So it doesn't surprise me that the leader of a thuggish labor organization was himself a violent man who couldn't keep his hands to himself. But,
yeah. All right, should we move on?
Yeah, sure.
Bunch of random thoughts. Oh, I read that Dinner Goths article
Diner
you wanted
Goth.
Me to read?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Diner Goths.
Yeah, what did you think of it?
It was okay.
Yeah.
It was about sort of goth people in normal land.
Yeah.
What am I supposed to do? Tell me what I'm supposed to take away from it.
I don't know. Like, there's a couple things I think we should take away from it.
Like women with septum piercings who
They're
just work
now.
At a diner.
Yeah.
They are everywhere.
Yeah. So a couple things. So, like, I think it's completely correct that, like, it has become more acceptable over time to look and behave weirder, right?
Sure.
You know, Rob Mariani, the author, someone I know personally,
yeah.
But he, I've been hearing him retail this concept for a long time, so I'm kind of happy to see it, you know, mm-hmm. him write an essay and it blow up for him. But yeah, so he pegs this to, like, the internet.
There's probably pegging involved.
Yeah, right. Go ahead. Well, yeah, that's now a mainstream sexual yeah. practice, right? Per the article, yeah. yeah. So yeah, he pegs it to the rise of the internet. And I think there's something to that, right? Where
let your freak flag fly.
Yeah, you can no longer do you have to find, you know, because if you imagine that like 1% of people are weirdos, right? If you're bound by a particular geography, then it's very hard to be an open weirdo because right. there's just so right. fewer of those people. But if the wider internet is available to you, then you can have a sense of community that isn't geographically based, right? And you would maybe you're presenting for them. So even if you still look weird to everyone around you, this wider world of people that you want to see and present to, that encourages you to behave more weirdly, right? He ties it a lot to like economic pessimism of like, you know, declining fortunes for gen- I didn't find that didn't super convincing. But I like that. Yeah, I don't know. Just like, you know.
And, you know, it's funny because we forget that this used to be the case that being like a fan of like comic books or something
was
or
not,
anime used to be something you'd get
it was risible,
bullied
yeah.
for. Mm-hmm. And not so much when I was or when we were, you're a little bit younger than me, but when we were kids, but maybe immediately before I was a kid. That was some, you know, nerds, the whole high school archetypes of the jock and the nerd. Mm-hmm. Those things don't exist anymore.
No.
Because comic book movies are the most successful entertainment franchises of all time. And everyone is a fan of them. Everyone is a fan of Batman and Superman and Spider-Man instead of just the weirdos who were bullied.
Game of Thrones is another good example.
Game of Thrones.
This should have been, for sure. Yeah.
Lord of the Rings.
Compare it to like who is the fandom for like Xena Warrior Princess, right? These were nerds and
right.
you know.
It's true of anime. People. It's true of Pokemon. Yeah. It's true of Nintendo. You know, Asian influenced things have gone so mainstream. Well, there's more of them than there are of us. So mm-hmm. they all love it, and half of us do too, and that makes for a lot of people. But yeah, the internet and social media has allowed these things to be. We all see each other.
Yeah.
I see you liking it. And there's a comfort in that.
Yeah.
It's totally. Good. It's yeah. good stuff.
I think, yeah. Yeah. People are more expressive. Yeah.
Yeah. Weird nerd niche stuff is just all over the place.
The culture. Yeah. 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 I mean, it's part of like the mainstream, so to speak, has collapsed, right? There's really not, it's difficult to pin what is mainstream entertainment anymore, right?
Right.
Because the ways in which you would evaluate that or produce it have also kind of
right.
collapsed, right?
Right.
You watch TV by electing what show right. to watch. You don't go to the theater where, you know, you have a few select options produced by giant studios, right? Same with music or any streaming option, right? You know,
yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, so we live in age. Yeah, it just made me think of it because I was out, I feel like I grew up in the native land of the Diner Goths of, Idaho, where, you know, you see these people less in a place like Washington, D.C., but, yeah. You
here everyone is so intentional.
What's that?
Everyone here is so intentional.
Yeah.
And so, kind of buttoned up.
We live in a yuppie,
right.
Period. The Bugmen. That's a distinction from, Diner Goths. Yeah, you know, like if you ever live in Boise, Idaho, I encourage you to go into a Denny's at like 11:30 at mm-hmm. night. And you're gonna see someone with pink hair and plaid pajama pants and like a Nightmare Before Christmas hoodie. There's gonna be at least one table of people yeah. dressed like that at the Denny's, and that is a diner goth. So I've been familiar with this archetype, and I'm happy to see it theorized a little. So,
okay. Yeah. Okay. What else is on my list for today? Robots. We talked about time travel
mm-hmm.
as a concept in fiction.
Yeah.
Last week, I wanted to do that for. Robots.
Okay.
This week a little bit. AI. Mm. et cetera.
Well, because of the Jeff Bezos news?
No, just because I have a robot character in the story I'm writing.
Oh, you're starting a science fiction story.
Well, no, see, it's a fantasy story.
Oh, okay.
But it has little science fiction elements, including a character who's probably a robot.
Okay.
Ooh, spoiler. Ooh. So I was thinking of...
Yeah, now I can't read.
And also, I was thinking about... we've talked a lot about Star Wars, Star Trek. Did you watch Battlestar Galactica? Are you familiar at all with Battlestar Galactica?
When it first came out, I did watch the first couple seasons, but I was in like fifth grade, so.
Okay. The one on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah. The new one, not okay. The old
one. It only had four seasons, mm-hmm. So.
Okay.
I was a big fan of that.
Yeah, I remember it being really good.
It was really good.
Everyone considers it to be
great,
right?
It's less discussed, though, in our culture. It's not... I think super well remembered. Not that it was never as huge or relevant as Star Wars or Star Trek.
No, but it was widely regarded. But that is a show that really didn't escape like nerd fandom so much, right? There's no Battlestar Galactica movie and like extended universe, whatever, which is odd because it was so well regarded.
Right.
Maybe it just didn't do the numbers.
It's for people who like monitoring the situation. It's nice. For like military type people because they use proper military rank and terms.
Right, military sci-fi, yeah.
Yes.
So maybe that limits its appeal a little bit.
Right. But that part of it is really well done.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a very weird show.
Yeah.
I really liked it. It goes off the rails in the way that all sci-fi does.
Yeah, I love that though.
Yeah, where they again reveal that like half of the main characters are spoilers for this 20-year-old show are themselves the robots are very difficult to distinguish from real, like they just
because they're humans with
they're
emotions.
Just humans.
Yeah,
and they're not like they're also not made of. It's not like if you rip the skin off them, they've got robot part. They're grown intake. They're human beings.
Right.
They're just like a different race of humans, basically, who are forerunners of our humans.
Yeah.
The mythology of the show is very complicated. And so, so there's 12 models for the Cylons. So they all look like 12 specific people.
Yeah.
So there's always.
That should be kind of easy to figure out.
Well, right. So there's always, every time, you know, and it takes two or three seasons before you know who each of the. Well, at least the main eight lines are right. These people. So the first time you see a character, you're like, wait, we've seen that person before. Oh my God, that's them. That's one of the things. Yeah. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
And they do eventually reveal that like half the main characters are the other five ones that you haven't seen.
Mm-hmm.
And they have like false memories implanted in them. And and it's really weird stuff.
Yeah. I guess there's a couple different ways you can go with a robot character.
That's what I wanted to get into.
Yes, in a science fiction fantasy, I guess it's a little more rare to have automatons.
Right.
They can either be pure machine, right? And there's no real, they're just there to be a machine character, which maybe has particular attributes that are helpful for the plot, but aren't there to be a mirror into humanity's existence, right?
Yes.
Then you can have something a little, that's like C-3PO or whoever,
who isn't well thought out at all and makes no sense.
No, or R2-D2 or whatever, right?
Right.
No, or like maybe like the robots in the Liz Bailey, Isaac Asimov stories, Daniil Avlov. It was just like he's there's no pretense that he has emotions or anything like that, right? They're a robot.
Right.
Then there's like I might describe as I'm coming up with this taxonomy just off the top of my head, but you have like the searcher character, right? Maybe a Data from Star Trek Next Generation or Sonny from the iRobot movie with Will Smith, right? Someone that's very distinctly not human, but is kind of grasping at maybe... There is something larger to my existence and is kind of what aspires to be human, is searching to be human, but can't, still is limited by their
Robin Williams
origins.
Centennial Man.
Yes. Okay. Another Isaac Asimov story. Yeah. Yes. So obviously Isaac Asimov did deal with this in some of his robot stories, but in many of his robot stories, it's just like the robot is a logic problem, right?
Yes.
And the story just revolves around solving some mystery related to the three laws and how did the robot do that, right? And then there is the third type, which, as you described from Battlestar Galactica, where it's like they're robots, but they are in every other possible way human beings.
Right.
And so they really just exist to flesh out some theme of discrimination or racism.
Right.
Or aren't
clankers.
Really... Yeah.
Right. Right. Well, and Westworld, which I loved, mm-hmm. Sort of, although that's another one that goes off the rails.
Yeah.
And a lot of us at Reason watched at least the first season.
Yeah, I watched the first season and thought
the
it was great.
The first season is fantastic and deals very much with this, the discrimination they feel, and they're going through the process, you know, the two major robot characters, Dolores and Maeve, the madam, are going through the discovery of consciousness, mm-hmm. where they are plausibly human now or have human consciousness, despite the violent circumstances there as props in an amusement park. And that process of being props in an amusement park and subject to violence is part of the awakening, or, you know, and so on and so forth, mm-hmm. and deals with that very directly.
Right.
In a way that is, but is also then... eventually, I would say, poorly formulated, because then you start to, as we grapple with AI and we see what our technology looks like there in Westworld, this always bothered me. It's eventually revealed that they're in their consciousness is right in like a circular memory orb, mm-hmm. that literally has to be put into their head. Mm. Like, you don't have this. Dolores' personality is not available in the cloud. It doesn't when it's physically destroyed, that's her death. And it's like, well, that's not, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Right.
But that was just a way to limit the, them to be. The second season of that show is the most deeply confusing season of television I have ever watched in my entire life. And
yeah, I remember
that's why people stopped watching it. Because the second season takes place in two different time periods, but they are just like a few days apart from each other, mm-hmm. and they involve all the same characters in all the same clothes in all the same locations. So you don't know if you're seeing a scene of Bernard in the present or Bernard 2 days from now, and they go back and forth, and it is so unclear because you're constantly going, wait, didn't they just have a conversation? Oh, no, they had this conversation before, and it is so hard to follow that I understand why people gave it up.
Let's make sure you understand when nothing about what's happening or who anybody is,
right?
Who's human, who's not,
right?
And then layer on top of that all the mystery that we want to have for the series,
right? And just a needless time jump, a time jump done just to disguise the only narrative purpose it serves is ultimately to reveal that yes, one of the characters was killed and replaced by a robot version of that character. Wow. And that explains that character's motivations. And they had to show that part last.
Yeah.
So that's the feels only like reason for it. And it is so, so hard to follow. But it has a lot of really, despite that, there are a lot of really good moments in the second season in this theme of robots discovering consciousness. There's a great sequence that felt actually to me very derivative of Lost, of the Hatch. Like it's the old guy who owns who actually owns the park, and he has some kind of disease. Mm-hmm. And what you come to understand is that he's dead, mm-hmm. and they're trying to regrow him. Because mm-hmm. they're part of the Westworld thing is that, well, if we can do this with robots, we can do this with people.
Yeah.
We can clone you, and then your clone can discover consciousness and kind of almost inherit your memories in like in a Dune kind of way, mm-hmm. in the way the Bene Talaxu do in the later Dune novels. And he's like, but they always glitch and die anyway. And the Man in Black character is monitoring him over years and years and years. And is eventually like, you know what? Let's not do this. And then decides, fuck this. Robots are bad and evil, and they're going to try to take over the world. And I think I'm going to kill all of them instead. And it is the most, and he's the villain of the show. He's completely correct. This needs to put down, this is a threat to actual humans and needs to be mercilessly canceled right now. And it's hilarious to me that the show portrays him as the villain when he is so clearly correct that this experiment was bad and false and needs to be ended and they all need to be shut down.
That's good. That's the second season?
That's the second
But then
season.
It lumbers on for many more seasons.
Yeah, he
right?
fails. And the robots take over the world and kill all the humans. Oh. That's the third and fourth season.
Damn, that's not good.
Nope. That's why it's a cautionary tale. No, Dolores takes her crusade outside the park. You find out that she enslaves all of humanity and she turns people into chairs.
That's not nice.
No, it's interesting motivation. Like, people are just chairs now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they're alive. They just have to act as chairs.
Right.
She
can do to them what they did to what humans did to her at the park.
Yeah.
So she has some sound bait. It's like bees spread it or something. It's really Black Mirror. Yeah. So she can give voice commands to people.
Okay.
And they have to. So the relationship to the humans and the robots is just completely inverted.
Yeah. I don't like any sci-fi where the humans lose. Yeah. I'm a human chauvinist, yeah. Right? Yeah. Like, do you ever watch the new Planet of the Apes movies or the old ones for that matter?
I love the old ones. I like the Mark Wahlberg one that people didn't like.
Oh, yeah. That came out like 2000.
I thought that one had something going for it, but people didn't like it. And it's been ignored in the new movies.
I saw it as a child, and I remember sort of not liking it. People hate it because of the last scene, right? Where he comes back to Earth, and then it's like all like.
But I liked the apes. I thought it was a cool twist, because the logic of the movie is basically that he had, you know, he's an astronaut and they had sent one of their super well-trained monkeys into space and not recovered it. Mm-hmm. And that monkey went through some kind of time rift and is the founder of this society or something like that. It's a cool.
Yeah.
I liked that.
Yeah.
Did people make fun of the cost? I thought the costumes were really good.
Excellent. Yeah.
I thought they were fantastic.
Yeah.
It's not CGI. It's people in monkey costumes and it looks good.
It does look really
good. It looks really good.
Yeah. Paul Giamatti plays a hilarious character.
He's fantastic.
Character. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, they have what's his face from the original movie, Charlton Heston.
Yeah.
Who, you know, was known for later in life for being a gun rights guy. Mm-hmm. And he has a cameo in that movie as the dying leader of the apes or something. Mm-hmm. And he says to the bad guy, and this is so interesting, he shows the bad ape a prototype gun and says, this is the source of their power. Mm-hmm. The human, the apes are a primitive society.
Yeah.
The humans in their world are even more primitive, but their society is more primitive than ours. He said, they have technology. This is why you have to put them down, why you have to suppress them, because they invent things like this to defeat us. Mm. It's actually a kind of pro-Second Amendment thing, if you think about it. Like,
secretly,
this is the tool of mankind's empowerment over the ape world.
Right, yeah, great equalizer. Mm-hmm. So we have to be massacred for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to go back and watch that movie because it actually, the more I'm remembering about it, it actually was pretty good.
Yeah.
So the new ones are also, the first one with James Franco, the second and third ones, excellent.
Yeah, really?
Particularly the second one.
Really?
With Gary Oldman is really, really good. Just like, I love a movie where the strategic dilemma makes sense. Not every, people on either side don't have to be evil in order to have conflict. You know, I'm loving all that. They set up a really good strategic dilemma, right? The humans have, sort of cobbled things together. So to catch people up, the first movie sets up that, a monkey plague.
Right, there's a disease.
Created in a lab, sort of like COVID.
Yeah.
spreads across the world and kills most of the humans.
Right. They didn't take their ivermectin, so.
They didn't take their ivermectin, yeah. Second movie begins, the smart apes are living in the forest outside San Francisco, and some semblance of human society has reclaimed the city and is trying to piece itself back together, right? And it's all, the plot is about the humans trying to, get this hydroelectric dam working where the apes live, and so they have to negotiate, and some of the apes are like, yes, let's try to, we should have good relations because that will prevent conflict, and then some of the apes are like, no, if you let them rebuild, then they'll eventually come and kill us, right? And it's like, that's actually a pretty smart dilemma to have, and there's not a right answer, because even if the humans that you're dealing with now are good, you don't know what the next ones are going to be. And also, obviously, the humans themselves are like conflicted between, yes, I want to have good relationships with the apes, we should be able to piece something together, and then some of the humans are like, no, these people are dangerous, and they're both right? So it's all really good. But my problems with both those movies is just the humans keep getting wiped out, right? Spoilers, but yeah. I want to see I'm a human chauvinist. I want to see the humans win. I want to see ultimately society prevail. Similar problem with any sort of zombie fiction. The zombies always win. So
zombies
like
are exhausting as a thing. I'm so over zombies. I don't want to watch zombie related things anymore. It holds zero appeal to me. The Walking Dead has used
lumbered
up
on
all of my bandwidth for zombie stuff for the rest of time.
I don't think anyone's trying to tell an interesting zombie story anymore, right? The best they can do is like, oh, the world sucks and the people are worse than the zombies. Mm-hmm. That's it. It's just like depressing nihilism, right?
It's depressing nihilism, right? It invites you to compare this to, oh, are we really better? But of course we're better than them. They're
of course.
Zombies.
Yeah.
They're not an interesting foe. It's fun. Like, zombie video games are fun.
Yeah, sure.
They're fun as obstacles in something you're interacting with. I just don't think they make for engaging storytelling. The Walking Dead, I don't know if I've said this on this podcast. Like, it had its moments where it was good. It went on for like 10 seasons or something. It was frequently on the verge of becoming cinematic or literary in some way and then failing to do that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. 100%.
What I would say. Yeah. The arc where they, after the prison is destroyed and then they're all end up on their little adventures, was kind of good at building to that, the society that eats people, the Terminus.
Yeah.
That was good. That was right in the middle of the show.
Weirdly, I only saw the final episode of that season. Okay. I didn't watch the run up to it. Again, some of these, I'm like, you're a show completionist. If you start watching something, you have to see everything.
Basically, yeah.
I'm not that way at all. With books, I'm like that. I'm like, okay, I started this, I should finish it. But with television shows, I will, jump ship the second I'm bored, right? Unless someone really convinces me, I'm...
Chris Rufo said on Twitter the other day that he read 100 pages of Blood Meridian and put it down. Couldn't get through it.
Wow.
And we were all like, okay. Yeah, okay. Loser.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. What a...
No, I actually fully understand reading 100 pages of just nihilism,
violence and
saying I can't slog through this anymore, but we love it. But
well, that's the point of reading the classics, though. It's it's
eat your vegetables.
Yeah, it's a little bit of eat your vegetables, but also people of good taste and discernment have determined that this is good.
Listen to them.
Good work. You should listen to them, right? I don't have any of that. There's none of that reassurance for, is it worth it to get through the next 6 episodes of Rings of Power, right?
Right.
There's no reassurance there, and probably it's not worth it, right?
Right. Well, I don't, I might stop watching things more regularly. I don't start watching random things. It's unusual now for me to pick up just something. I don't turn on Netflix and go, oh, what's this? I'll watch that. I never do that.
Yeah, no,
something has to be recommended to me by someone. I have to commit and decide this is the next thing I'm consuming. Mm-hmm. And then I will mostly stick with it.
You're rebelling against the algorithm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I don't do that. And I don't watch a lot of new things. I'm showing the things I already like to my better half, including Mad Men, which we just got through the 4th season of.
Yeah.
The 4th season's a real low point for Don.
Although watched the 6th
season. The 6th season is his ultimate low point.
Absolutely. That is just grim. And
My husband hates Don, and I keep saying, just keep watching. He gets his comeuppance.
Yeah.
It gets worse.
My goodness. Yeah, it's interesting. So, yeah, I watched a few episodes of the 4th season and decided to skip the rest of the season. So I was like, yeah, I remember not really liking this season.
It is my least favorite season.
Although
I was
looking at some of the chatter online. And
people love the 4th season.
They consider it the best season. That's not true at all.
I agree. It's not my favorite. It's probably my least favorite, but I still thought it was great.
The 6th season rekindled my interest a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm getting less... And you're less and less interested in Don's struggles because they're just the same, but more so.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the show also is a little less interested in him, right? There's the other characters have other things going on too. And it's still great. They have some really great episodes. The one where in the office, they all take the meth shots.
Yes. And it's that's a very experimental episode.
It's extremely experimental.
The way it's shot, it keeps jumping forward in time with jump cuts.
Yes, because they're on drugs, and so they forget the last hour,
yes,
right? It reminded me a little bit of the movie Limitless. Have you ever seen that with Bradley Cooper?
Yeah.
Very Randian movie in my mind.
Oh.
Perhaps, yeah, I know. Yeah.
That's the one where Ken tap dances at random.
Right, yeah, because even though he has a broken foot.
Right, it's absurdist.
And then it's surreal.
Surreal
is how I would describe it. And then, so it's surreal in the office, and then it has one of the most terrifying sequences of the entire show, where that woman breaks into the apartment.
Yes.
And it's just the children there, and it's like
it's scary because she could hurt them,
and she's menacing.
Yes.
Right. Because, like, the kids don't really understand what's going on, mm-hmm. but, like, you do.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just a frightful woman. And
yeah.
It's very scary.
Yep.
And you're like, you know, you want Don. The only thing you want is for Don to show up there and,
right.
you know, protect them.
Right.
But he's high on drugs. Yeah. So yeah. That actually was a very good episode. Yeah.
I did like watching the fourth season this time and knowing, obviously, how it ends up, that Don marries Megan in the finale. Megan is, you know, Don's next great love, is really like introduced very subtly and is like on the periphery the
right,
entire
yeah,
season.
Yeah.
She's always like, they say her name several times so that you learn that she's not just some random secretary, and she's just kind of there. And there's one of the episodes, like, it lingers on her from Don's perspective, and she's very subtly built up as the next major woman in Don's life. I like how it's done.
Yeah, I remember that too, and I like that because most shows generally don't do that,
yes.
and you know, for good reason a lot of times. But it makes the show feel a little more real,
yes.
and that someone doesn't just appear and become important to the viewer because
right.
they are now being introduced as a main character.
Right.
Don's life in this office is real, and so
right.
people enter his life as they do in everyone's lives. There's
right.
someone who's peripheral to him and then becomes an intimate of his.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of interesting stuff between Roger and Joan in the season. I don't know. It was good to watch.
I'll have to return.
You wanted to do
oh, yes,
Mad
right,
Men spin-off ideas?
Yeah, or? I don't know what really was motivating this, but maybe it's because I get a little less interested in the show in the mm-hmm. later seasons, and also the show itself starts to do some wackier things, right? Starts making me wonder, what is the wider, you know, everything's got to be an extended universe now. What are the Mad Men spin-offs to keep this train rolling, all right? So I have three ideas. We're just going to riff.
Okay.
Like a Mad Men-like pitch.
Okay.
I'm going to give you one. You're
okay.
going to give me one.
Okay.
And we're going to go three down
okay.
the line. Okay?
Okay.
Three taglines. That's
okay.
what I'm asking from you.
Okay.
Okay. First one. Real Housewives of Westchester. It's centered around Trudy Campbell. Okay? Taking care of Tammy in the house.
Yeah.
And she's just like going to the grocery store and sunning herself by the pool. And really, I just want to see Alison Brie dressed up in 1960s and 70s garb.
That'd
just
be
going
great.
About her day.
That's a
so,
good one. I
yeah.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we need a sequel series, several sequel, an immediate sequel series, I guess, where Don and Henry have to raise the kids together because Betty dies.
Oh, right.
And that would be kind of funny to watch. What, they move into a house together. Two, a guy and a dude who used to be married to the guy's wife, hating each other and raising these kids.
Okay, that's really good. That's really good.
That's
yeah.
my idea.
Yeah, maybe they both move into Don's.
Like a Full House type show, but with no comedy and just loathing.
Right.
And like a laugh track anyway.
Yeah, Henry's getting mad at Don for going out and sleeping with other women, even though it doesn't really make sense
yeah.
why he would be mad.
Yes.
Oh.
And they would develop like a faux, like, where are you going, honey?
I told you I don't like it when you say that. Yeah, Henry brings Don to like all the like fundraisers yeah. and he just gets tanked and starts talking about how they need to get out of Vietnam.
Yes!
Oh man, okay, Henry and Don.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay, number two.
Call it Bad Men.
Bad Men.
Henry's not even a bad guy.
Sad
but
Men.
Sad
yeah.
Men.
Yeah.
Better.
Sad
yeah.
Men. Yeah. No, he actually, that's why I think he's uninteresting, is because he's
no,
like,
he's just great.
Yeah, he's just like a normal human being. He's just
well,
like not
just
a horrible
person. But it reveals Betty's character because she's still so unhappy at the end of the fourth season.
Yeah.
And she realizes that that's just her fault.
Yeah.
She can't blame Don anymore. She has everything she should want and she's still unhappy.
Right.
That's on you, lady.
I just can't get over her being such an austere mother, right? I watched the episode where, like, they go for a picnic and they're having a nice time and then Bobby, like, trades away her sandwich for candy just because he's a dumb kid and not thinking about it. And she's like, oh, the day is ruined.
I know, but it's so real. That kind of person exists. But anyway.
Okay, number two. The Cosgrove stories. So Ken
yes.
Cosgrove quits the corporate game,
yes.
moves up back to New England,
yep.
to a small Maine town,
yep.
and each episode revolves around some sort of murder mystery that he has
oh
to solve.
Oh my god, that's so great!
Yeah, while he's writing his science fiction. And there would be some thematic connection between his science fiction story and the murder that happens in the town.
God, that is such a great idea. Oh my god, I love that idea. Yeah. I really like that one.
That's pretty good, isn't it? Okay.
That's a real winner.
A little bit of Twilight Zone. So there would be maybe some like X-Files-y surrealist mm-hmm. elements, but mostly Murder, She Wrote.
Yes.
And a little bit of like Mad Men yes. banter about an industry, yes. right? He could be going through, you know, be in the 70s and 80s. And so the environment for... He's trying to write short stories and maybe TV is taking over more, mm-hmm. you know, things
and
like that.
He's probably initially dismissed by the authorities. And he's one of those. Hippie, they probably don't even understand his profession. He's a lawyer from New York.
Right.
I write stories, sir.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. The cops won't listen to him because they think he's some pot smoking hippie from the big city.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent.
Okay. Prequel series.
Okay.
The Founding of Sterling Cooper, a young Bert Cooper
yes.
and Roger's dad. Mm-hmm. Starting the agency in the wake of World War I, the Depression.
Yes.
It's 1920s, so it starts with flapper type, hiding the alcohol, kind of Gatsby-esque excess.
Excellent.
And then, that would be awesome.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Show the origins of, show Roger's father and Burke Cooper, who's such a great character. He's
You want so much more of him in the series, right?
But you just get little perfect nuggets of him.
Yep.
And it's just, when he appears, it's going to be a big deal episode.
Yeah.
He's such a font of wisdom the entire time.
He is, truly.
Great character. I love his exit. I love his death is so noble too.
Right
in
after
the series,
seeing the moon,
after seeing the moon, and then he gets that little dance number.
Yeah,
it's great. Great character. Great actor. Great.
Yeah, I just watched the. Everything he says has such weight, right?
Yes.
Because he is the wise old sage who has seen the ups and downs of this
he's
industry.
He's always right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Does he ever make a mistake?
Nope.
I guess. I mean,
of course not. He's a Randian.
Right.
Yeah.
I wish they'd maybe done a little more with that.
They could have done more with that.
Yeah. Maybe the show got a little less interested in that idea.
I mean, we watched the one in the fourth episode where Roger is prejudiced against Japanese people and they lose the business because of it.
Right.
Bert is not.
Right. Oh, he loves the Asian stuff, right? Yeah. But he's a man of capital.
Right.
He's putting behind all these petty grievances, right?
Certainly.
He just has so many, he has so many wise sayings throughout. They give him some of the best lines. What's the one from the very first season where he's talking about how like Peter Campbell's family sold off all their real estate in the Depression?
Some men have no faith in this country.
Right. But he loves America, right? Or what's the other one when his longtime secretary dies?
Oh, she was born in a barn and died in a Manhattan skyscraper. She's an astronaut. It's beautiful.
It is a beautiful line.
It's beautiful.
Okay, very good. So Sterling Cooper, the founding years.
Yes.
Or the early years or something like that.
Sterling and Cooper.
Okay. this third one, okay, it's called, I developed this with a friend, so I can't claim full credit for it, but it's called Priceless. And it's about Lane Price in purgatory trying to get into heaven.
Because he killed us.
By performing, quantum leap, like he has to jettison into people's lives and like balance their books.
Oh my
god. And each episode provides kind of like a moral lesson.
Oh my god. That is so great.
No, it's not great. It's priceless.
Oh, I love that idea. This stuffy, upper crust British man doing a quantum leap. So good. That's a great one. Great idea.
Yeah.
Okay. My last idea is another sequel series, but far in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Don, now old man, an executive at a... business in the very old man.
Like,
so he's in the 90s. He's mm-hmm. he'd be in his 80s or something by mm-hmm. then. Trying to deal with, now doing branding campaigns and not understanding youth culture at all.
Right.
I wish it could be taking place in today's world, but that way he'd be dead by then.
Right.
So it'd have to be set in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So him dealing with the kind of 90s office space, mm-hmm. Matrix. Mm-hmm. Remember all the fiction about how boring office life is?
Yeah, yeah. There's no color or glamour
right.
at all
him
anymore.
Set in that.
Oh, yeah.
And just, and you know, having achieved some, having been known in the old days, you know, he made the Coca-Cola commercial, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But now he's, his creativity is absolutely stifled by the office space fight club.
Yeah. Kind of he's thing. Out in some like California office yes. park. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. I love that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about like, what, cause you can't, I mean, obviously you can't set it contemporary times.
No, he'd be dead by then.
No. Yeah, I did have a tweet about this where it's like Mad Men set today, but it's he's going back to calling himself Dick Whitman to avoid like a Me Too-ing and trying to get along with all the marketing interns who are drinking like NA cocktails and mm-hmm. you know doing Adderall and he's mm-hmm. like, what's going on here? Yeah.
Now you could do more with this show. You could bring back some of these characters and do more. I mean, it's.
I think it's just like obviously the writers were.
They'd had enough, but.
They'd had enough. I mean, it seems like they were.
The events of the 70s just aren't as interesting to adapt as the events of the 60s, maybe?
I think it's. I mean, they could be, but I guess the 60s, there's that an interesting like turbulence, right?
Well,
whereas
the
70s is just. Bad,
right.
Bad times.
And the,
right?
the culture very rapidly shifts from
yes.
50s style, Eisenhower era, housewives, etc., buttoned up to hippie culture.
Right.
Happens very radically overnight. The women being disparaged at all times in the workplace to running everything just alongside men,
right.
to black people
right.
getting rights and suddenly being in their presence and...
Right.
So on.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's why the decade attract. I mean, A, it's yeah. like the high point of that that industry,
yeah.
right? And that's why it attracted the writers, was it right. was such a decade of turbulence and change. Right.
They used to think of advertising as a kind of hypnosis, which is so funny now.
Right.
Because, so much of what is said about advertising is said about... you know, social media's effects on us.
Algorithms.
Right, algorithms. That sounds reminiscent of those arguments against mm-hmm. advertising. Yeah. Those arguments about advertising were very wrong
yeah.
and very oversold
mm-hmm.
and exaggerated.
yeah.
Which should be a cautionary tale a little bit.
Right? Sure.
Like subliminal messages, the hidden persuaders.
Right.
There's an argument about advertising that actually that Nick Gillespie told me about when I was writing my social media book and how it just, like the science of that never added up at all.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting because it I'm onto the seventh season now, and Don has an interesting line when he's talking to the guy installing the computer in the office,
mm-hmm.
and the computer technician, business owner, he's like, does advertising work? And Don's like, on some people, right?
yeah,
some people aren't persuadable. Yeah. But I don't know that it is. It's just such a weird. I mean, of course, you know, we're journalists, so maybe we'd be more interested in the media aspects of the show, but like just such a strange time when there was the cultural products that people are consuming. It's just everything is so much more centralized, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's network television, there's magazines, and there's newspapers, and I guess, you know, billboards or whatever else, right? But yeah. And then, yeah, everything comes out of these centralized agencies too, right? Who are buying ad space, you know,
mm-hmm.
And newspaper space. I mean, that's kind of the service they offer. Is
yeah.
We buy the space and time in bulk and then come up with, you know, have specialized creative minds to come up with how to sell your product at the right time to the right
people.
And
these people all live rich, elite, hedonistic lives because they're at the avant-garde
right.
Culture.
Right.
They're at the head of the culture.
Right. Whereas today, you know, who are the, I mean, obviously ad agencies
exist. Advertising executives, they don't have cultural relevance the same way.
No, I mean.
Or if they do, they're not tooting their own horns or something. I don't know.
It's the Instagram influencers, right? I guess
right.
That's would be where the glamour is, but there's no, what would be the setting for a show like that? It would just be the person's.
Right. Advertising is a lot of, well, right. We talked about this in a previous episode of the show, that more people work in advertising than did back then. It's just. Because people are influencers. People
right.
are mm-hmm. doing personal, personality-based expression to sell you things.
Right.
It has been decentralized. Everything
right.
is decentralized.
Yeah.
There's not the thing.
Yeah, actually, it is kind of an interesting change in advertising, right? Is like in the show, like the ad agency is supposed to be silent in the advertisements,
yes.
right? It's about the ad speaking to you,
yeah.
the consumer. But now it's very much like the you want to have some sort of relationship with the person selling you the product, right?
Right.
It's beyond a brand. It's a person that is the brand that is then selling you the thing, right? Yeah. I don't know. Changed it's media really changes and yeah, now here
really
we are.
Yeah, I'll see. You know, as you're scrolling TikTok or Instagram, I don't really use TikTok. I scroll Instagram. And, you know, every, I don't know, every fifth reel is some kind of advertisement, but very clearly very tethered to me that knows, you know, what kinds of things I'm interested in. I just got tickets to see, I'm going to Vegas next weekend. And I've gone to Vegas. You've gone a couple times too for Freedom Fest. Oh, you used to live there.
Yeah.
And Freedom Fest, the big libertarian gathering that we participate in sometimes is often in Vegas. So I've been there a number of times. I love Vegas. Love it there. And every time I'm there, and I love magic shows, and every time I'm there, I would see the giant billboard for Shin Lim, and I'd be like, man, I wish I'd gotten tickets for it. It's too late now. Every year I think that. Going to Vegas next week, just a little vacation, and got tickets to see Shin Lim. I'm going to see Shin Lim, and
I'm so excited.
Who is Shin Lim? Who is Shin Lim? Shin Lim is a magician.
Oh, okay.
He was big on America's Got Singing talent stars, British voice acting thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That thing.
Yeah.
I don't watch any of those things. But he won, and he's had a residency in Vegas for years and years and years.
Okay.
And I've
that's right.
I've watched him on YouTube.
You're a big magic guy. I forgot.
I mean, I wouldn't say I'm a big because if you say you're a libertarian and you're a big magic guy, like there are bigger magic guys among us.
Yeah, you take off your cape and top hat to do this show.
I can't perform any magic. I like magic and I see magic shows. Jerry Orstrom, president of Reason's board, is a more knowledgeable practitioner of the arts than I am. And has introduced us to some very, very talented magicians. I've seen a few show on his recommendation. So anyway, I'm really excited for this.
Okay, I'm happy for you.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. You like Vegas?
Yeah, it was
all
right.
I love the desert.
So that was actually the real appeal to me. I lived there during COVID time, so some of the stuff wasn't up to its former glory of the Strip and Fremont Street and whatever else. Which I don't hate those areas. I really like Fremont Street compared to the Strip. But no, mostly what I enjoyed about Vegas was going out and like desert hiking and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So,
I also just love soulless tourist trappy type things.
Hmm, yeah.
I like things where people gather.
Yeah, I wrote for our travel issue from last year. I wrote in defense of tourist traps.
Good for you.
Thank you.
I want to yes and that.
Yeah, it's nice. It's what is the benefit?
It's nice to know this thing
is set up for
is
you.
Is set
to
up
visit.
For me,
yeah.
A tourist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have to go searching for the next hidden gem that no one is ready for me when I arrive. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a comfort in just arrive. I know I'll get there. I'll be in some giant building that will have a gym and a pool. Yeah. And I know the lay of the land, and I don't even like to gamble, really.
No, I don't gamble at all.
Yeah. I don't gamble at all. But
it has no appeal to
me. But you know what I like sitting around? We've done this. We sit around a giant table where people are playing poker, have some drinks.
Yeah,
I like listening to the sound effects. I like that other people are having fun.
It's absolutely
I like
fun.
That they're smoking indoors. That
yeah,
I'll partake
that's
in for
really
sure.
Cool. Yeah, I do really enjoy that.
We'll be partaking in that.
Love ripping the heaters indoors. Go out to Fremont Street and get yourself like a giant beer and walk around and
this is America.
It's America. Yeah. Vegas, like if you don't like Vegas at some point you just don't like America.
Right.
Right. Yeah. You know, is it seedy at times and grotesque and gluttony? Yeah, of course. But that so is America. So
that's what Cormac McCarthy thought.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Should we leave it there?
Let's leave it there.
All right. See you guys next week.